This podcast may contain adult language and situations, graphic, gory details, and other not-so-nice things. Listener discretion is advised. I'm Lacey.
And I'm Ashley. And this is United States of Murder. This week, we're joined by Elise from the podcast True Crime Cat Lawyer, and we discuss a notorious case from Oregon.
So buckle up and join us on this dark and twisted ride through the Beaver State.
Mothers who kill their children. Something I cannot fathom. Thankfully, it's rare, but when it does happen, it's heartbreaking. To be honest, this was hard for me to even talk about. From a little girl, you play with dolls, or babies, as me and my little sister used to call it. It's ingrained in you to be a mama, to be nurturing and loving. And then when you grow up and you have your own, it's a completely indescribable feeling. Suddenly you understand why your mom was so overprotective, why she panicked over you forgetting to call, or when you were late coming home from school. You're the mother now. And there is absolutely nothing that you would not do to protect your child. Mamas love hard. We fight fiercely and protect our own. You see it in the wild with animals as well. Don't get between a mama and her babies, or you will unleash a type of hell you aren't ready for. So what happens in these cases? The Susan Smiths, the Andrea Yates, and the Casey Anthonys. What makes these mothers and others like them take the precious lives that they've created?
Motherhood is considered a sacred and special duty by most. The term maternal instinct is something that all of us have heard about. But what if I told you it was largely just a myth? Some mothers will feel the rush of immediate love for their newborn, and in others, that bond is something that builds slower over time. However, for a few, that bond will never come. A person, no matter their gender or sexual orientation, are capable of developing a keen sense of their child, according to Dr. Catherine Monk, psychologist and professor at Columbia University Medical Center. Research shows that fathers and adoptive and foster parents also experience heightened levels of oxytocin, serotonin, and dopamine during the transition to parenthood. So the brain chemistry doesn't only change in the person giving birth, but the truth is not all parents have the innate ability to care for children. All murderers are terrible, and that is not up for debate. But there is something even more troubling about a mother that would kill her own child. Filicide is the deliberate act of a parent killing their own child, and it's beyond shocking and defies all logic and understanding. But even sociopaths are capable of having children. So today we're actually chatting with Elise from True Crime Cat Lawyer. Attorney by day, cat lady by night. I identify with the cat lady part, but not the lawyer part. But yeah, we had an interesting chat about a very notorious mother from Oregon.
Diane Downs.
Yeah, so we're going to get into that now.
Yeah, I did not know a lot about Diane Downs personally before we got into this. Is the area, it's probably big there, right? Like yeah. In terms of cases that people talk about a bunch.
Yeah. So she's probably one of our more infamous killers in this state. Unfortunately, we have a couple mommy killers in the area.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've covered one on my podcast, and then there's another one that I'll be covering in the future. But Diane Downs is probably the most well-known because, well, you guys will kind of explain why she's a little more famous than some of the others.
Yeah, definitely. Ashley's seen, is it, so what's that? What's the
most? Well, I'm old. Y'all are probably way younger than me. But they used to have these things called mini-series on the TV.
Mini-series. No, that's still a thing.
And it would be like a three-night deal.
Yeah.
And Farrah Fawcett played her.
Yeah.
It was based on the book.
Small Sacrifices. Yeah. Okay, I was trying to remember. Was it called Small Sacrifices?
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Haven't
you? Our children.
But
it's really good.
You've also read the book.
I did read the book.
I have not read the book, but I don't know if I could.
It's a lot.
Yeah. It's,
but
her life was bananas. There was a lot more to it than.
Well, there always is.
Than I just thought.
All right. So are we going to jump in?
Let's just jump in. Let's start talking about Notorious Diane.
Okay. So Diane Downs is probably a name that most listeners don't know as much about as we do now, but they've heard her name. So
unless you're in Oregon,
on Cooch Street. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a background and talk about the events that led up to this crime. So Elizabeth Diane Downs was born August 7th, 1955 in Phoenix, Arizona. She alleges that when she was 12 years old, her father sexually abused her, but she since said that that wasn't true. Her parents were very strict, and Diane liked to rebel by wearing clothes that showed off her skin and by dating older guys. Is that really rebelling, though?
See, I
feel like that's teenagers.
I thought so as well. And if you have any input on that, you can jump in. They're very religious and strict, from what I gather, very conservative. So they didn't really want her dating at all, from what I gather, like, period. And the guy she started dating, he was just a couple of years older, but he had long hair and they didn't like the way he dressed. And
so they were just parents.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. My kid has long hair.
Well, they thought that it was like, you know, think of it in the 70s or like, oh,
I feel like that was the norm in the 70s. Well, yeah. Also. We're just going to argue this whole time. So. Maybe they were afraid
he was a hippie. It was the 70s.
It was the 70s. I get it.
It was the 70s. They're like, is he smoking doobies? What's he up to?
Of course he is. With your slut daughter. No, I'm playing. With her half-naked body. Anyway, so she starts a relationship with 16-year-old Steve Downs when she was just 14. Okay, that's a little much. They were neighbors, but her parents did not approve because he was older. So they dated all through high school and afterwards. Steve joined the Navy while Diane attended Pacific Coast Baptist College in Orange County. Orange, California.
That might be in Orange County. I don't know.
She went to a Bible college.
Yeah. See, they were very, they were very religious. So they wanted her in a religious school.
Well, it worked out for them. So they stayed together and did promise to remain faithful, but Diane was expelled 1 year later for promiscuous behavior. So she a hoe in college.
I didn't see any elaboration on what she did exactly. So
what do you want to know?
Well, I mean, they just expelled her because of...
Well, I'm sure because it was like a Christian school.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, I wonder if it was like there was a boy in her dorm room or if it was less or more than that, you know, because right. Some schools are really strict and some aren't. So I was just curious what exactly.
Lacey wants the details.
Getting expelled over that just seems.
I feel like a church school, though.
Yeah. I don't know.
So after she's expelled, she goes back to live with her parents in Arizona. On November 13th of 73, once Steve returned from the Navy, she ran away from home and they got married. According to Ann Rule's book, Small Sacrifices, Steve had told her that they were way too young for kids and he didn't want them to have any right away, but Diane quickly became pregnant with their first child, Christy Ann. She was born in 1974. Then 6 months later, Diane joined the Navy, but she wasn't gone for long. After 3 weeks of being in basic training, she returned home because of severe blisters. First of all, I don't like people yelling at me, so I could never join.
I don't know why she was interested. But...
Boys, duh. Have you seen a guy in a Navy outfit? I kind of would want to join, but I'm too old for that now. But back in the day, clearly she already got kicked out. You don't make me spell it. Anyway, have you seen the Fleet Week in New York? So she's got severe blisters. She comes home. 2 years later, they have Cheryl Lynn, another daughter, and Steve decided to get a vasectomy. They both agreed that they didn't have enough money to take care of more kids and they were struggling financially, but she did get pregnant again.
likely from someone she was having an affair with, or maybe the vasectomy didn't take, but she ended up getting an abortion 6 weeks later. They were both very unhappy in their marriage, and Steve was also having affairs.
It's messy.
This is a lot.
Yeah.
This is what, the 80s now?
At this point.
70s? Late 70s.
70s, yeah.
Anyways, approximately 6 weeks later, Diane decided to visit a fair.
What fair? I don't know. I don't know.
Like a carnival fair?
Yeah.
Like a job fair?
I was assuming a county fair. I was assuming a county fair, but I don't know. That's a speculation.
So there were anti-abortion demonstrators there with signs and photos of fetuses, and this really hit home with Diane. Some articles suggest that she had PTSD, and some of these photos triggered her. We're only speculating.
Yeah.
After this, she became very anxious and sad, and then decided to name the baby she never had. They moved to Mesa, Arizona in 78, and both worked at a mobile home manufacturing company. So now they're working in a factory that builds trailers, and he's cheating, and she's cheating. Yes.
It's yeah, yep.
So she asked Steve if he would reverse his vasectomy, but he refused. It was almost like she wanted another baby to replace Carrie. She found a good specimen, in Diane's words, to get pregnant with. His name was Russ, and he was 19.
She wrote some article. I don't even know if it's articles or necessarily or interviews, but she called him a specimen.
So this was like the heart song.
She was looking for... Right?
She just wanted a baby.
She wanted Steve to get the vasectomy reversed. He refused. So at work, she's like, I'm gonna find a
baby daddy.
Yeah. But not, she didn't want the daddy, but
she wanted a daddy.
It's very complicated.
Doesn't sound like it. She found a 19-year-old.
Well, she was still pretty young. She was still really young though, if you think about it.
Then. How old was she?
They got married when she was like around 16, I want to say.
No. She was in college.
Oh, that's right. My bad. No, sorry. I was thinking of, they started dating when she was 14.
He was 16.
16.
And then she went to college and they came back and then she ran away from home. So she had to be in her 20s.
Yeah.
We're so unprepared.
We're bad at math.
Sorry.
We're very bad at math. And when it involves dates, I don't know.
So she becomes pregnant again. Russ does not want the baby because he is 19. Steve didn't either, but she did go through with the pregnancy. And in 1979, Stephen Daniel Downs was born, who went by Danny. Steve was well aware that he wasn't Danny's biological father, but he accepted him as his own anyway. Diane was shocked when Danny was born because she was expecting a girl the entire time and became very depressed after she gave birth because it wasn't the right gender.
Yeah, but she had her abortion at 6 weeks. So she did not know.
Good Lord, that's super early.
That is. So she did not know the gender.
What the gender. She just assumed.
She just put that, I don't know why, she just assumed it was a girl. She named her Carrie. So that whole time she thought she lost a daughter. So then she was just thinking this has to be the daughter to replace.
And then it was a boy.
So she was just.
But you know what? I had a friend. I'm not going to say any names because they listen. So don't be mad at me for telling the story. When I was pregnant with Max, she was pregnant with her child. She just knew she was having a girl. She just knew it because like everybody in her family had boys. Then she found out it was a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so excited because we were just a couple months apart.
Sure, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, we're best friends and we're both pregnant and I'm having a boy and you're having a boy and they're going to be best friends and we can shop together and do all this stuff. And she sobbed. She cried. She did not accept that she was having a boy for months. She didn't buy anything. She didn't want to talk about it. She didn't pick out names. It's like she was depressed.
Yeah, I've heard of that happening.
Well, and then I had another friend who has three boys. And when she found out that, you know, this was the last kid, third child, this was it. And she found out it was a boy.
She said it was almost like a death because she was like, this was my last chance to have another baby and I'm never going to get the little girl I always wanted. It's not that she doesn't love her, but it was like, I'm sure hormones are psycho and you're just like, you know, you expect that and then you're let down. And yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. I don't have a child, so I've never gone through that. Do you have children?
I don't have kids, but I definitely have a similar story with my best friend. She has two boys and the second one was her last one. And mm-hmm. she was pretty upset when they found out it was going to be a boy.
Right. And I mean, I'm not shaming anyone because I just have one kid and I didn't care what it was as long as they got out of me. I was done. But
not dying.
I couldn't. I mean, I guess I could sympathize with you. You want to have a certain gender.
Even too, not necessarily you want a gender because plenty of people do. But if you assume it, like right. some women are like, I just know. I had mm-hmm. dreams of the baby. I just know. And I have friends that are that way too. They're like, I know what it is. I have that feeling. And it's almost like if you have the baby and you were wrong, kind of, you know sure. what I mean? I feel like I can empathize with that. Like you assume the whole time, this is my girl. This is yeah. my girl baby. You don't even doubt it. There wasn't even a, what if it's right. not? And then she gives birth and
it's,
yeah. and she goes through and she just had a baby. She's going to be, she doesn't necessarily have to be depressed. I'm not saying that, but like, it's normal to be depressed after giving birth, but on top of just normal.
Well, and it's postpartum, not, and it's not, your husband doesn't want it.
Yeah,
the baby,
there's a lot going on.
Want it, and
so she did have a lot going on. I'm not excusing anything. I'm just saying right. there is a lot going on mentally there
yes.
for sure. Yeah. So from the start, Diane and Steve had a really tumultuous relationship. They fought all the time for various reasons, probably over the affairs they were both having and financial problems.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's not much of a surprise that they ended up divorcing in 1980.
That was a good year.
Is that your birth year?
That's the year I was born.
Oh, it was the year. I don't know which month they divorced, but yeah, they divorced. So, and according to an article by ThoughtCo, she decided that in order to make some money to make ends meet, she would become a surrogate mother.
That's a terrible idea.
Well, she gets pregnant so easily. I've never seen anything like it.
I mean, pregnancy is amazing, but like,
everyone's different. And some speculate she enjoyed the part of being pregnant, just not the parenting part. Some women really love that.
I liked being pregnant to a point.
Sure.
But then at the end, when you can't breathe, and you pee when you walk, you're sweating,
sell it,
and you can't sleep, everything hurts.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Then you're done. Then you're like, I'm done. But if you paid me
$10,000,
no, girl, no.
Well, that was
no. that's not like you can't even buy a Ford Focus.
That was
1980. No.
That was 1980. That was 41 years ago. I'm
bitch,
sure it's changed.
Why it's 40?
Oh, sorry, you don't know what time of the year this was. I'm so sorry.
Just bump those 41 breaks.
Edit that out. No, but this is kind of just my speculation. It wasn't. This is just my speculation, so no one sue me. But I think she liked the attention she got.
Sure.
Like people would be like, oh, Diane, you're pregnant. You're glowing. How's the baby? Just like that attention.
That's how I feel when
people
I get my teeth
noticed
cleaned.
Her. Like, yeah, similar, yeah, similar. But
exactly
like,
the same.
But, you know, just mm-hmm. people, she was like the center of the attention. But once the baby's born, she's not the center of attention anymore.
And now she's just got hemorrhoids and
yeah,
excess skin.
That whole thing. So it's not as easy as you would think to become a surrogate. You can't just be able to get pregnant. You also have to take psych evaluations.
Which is a good thing.
Sure. You have to do a lot of tests. It's not just psych evaluations, but you get questionnaires. They want to know about you, everything. So they want to rule out any underlying mental illnesses or issues that might arise or appear that are already existing. So overall, the screening evaluates motivation, stability, a support system, which is kind of interesting. it matters who's in the surrogate's life.
Well, that's a good thing.
Underlying beliefs about surrogacy, fertility, etc. So there's a lot of testing that gets in that. She lied about a lot of the information.
No.
Yeah, she lied. But one of the tests did show that she was very intelligent. She had a high IQ, but something else arose, and one of the examiners wrote this. A clear-cut neurotic picture is not present. She has poor ability to express anger in a modulated fashion and tends to have poor behavioral controls.
What does modulated fashion mean?
I don't know exactly, but I believe it's meaning like they probably gave her this questionnaire asking, and it's a modulated fashion, meaning like it's not natural anger. You know what I'm saying? Like it's, what would you do in this situation?
I'm self-diagnosing myself. I don't have that. I'm just Italian.
No, so. Yeah, no. I'm guessing like it's a modulated fashion, meaning they gave her these questions. So it's not like
she couldn't like say A, B, or C.
Well, no, she did, but she was picking the answers that were like red flags.
Okay.
Like you shouldn't.
You should not light someone's house on fire.
Yeah, no, I don't know exactly what she chose or, but yeah. So in total, she had 10 different tests. Yeah. And other examiners noted she was lacking in social cause and effect reasoning and that she had a major psychopathology, but they weren't quite exactly sure what her diagnosis was. They're like, something's there.
She's a psycho, but we like, don't know.
Something's there. Which kind. So regardless, this was actually something she bragged about to her friends. Yeah.
I'm crazy.
She joked that, yeah, that she couldn't pass because of that. Well, anyway, in the meantime, she got a full-time job working for the post office and her kids would stay with her parents sometimes. Sometimes they would go to Steve's, you know, they were.
Aww.
Yeah. So they bounced around too. Sometimes she would get a babysitter. So neighbors did make some reports regarding the welfare of Diane's children. Some said they weren't properly dressed for the weather at times. And occasionally they would be asking their neighbors for food and telling them that they're hungry.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Also, and this is really bad, if Diane couldn't find a babysitter and she had to go to work, she would let 6-year-old Christy be in charge of her younger siblings. And Danny would have been a toddler, a 6-year-old taking care of a toddler. And the other one was probably around 4-ish. I don't know exact age, but can Max, you imagine?
Max is 7.
Could you imagine him taking care of himself by himself and 2 children? Yeah. The neighbor said,
I don't even let him play outside by himself. No.
The neighbor said that she would say, our mommy's not home and I'm hungry. And she didn't give us any food, for example. So of course, you know, the neighbors were very concerned. Well, Diane later admitted she would grab her kids by the shoulders and shake them while screaming at them. She was just,
I don't want to be her ass.
She was very unhinged, for lack of a better term. Well, she kept trying to get in the surrogate program. She kept trying. So another psychiatrist who tested her noticed that she was hyper, like very hyper and very talkative. And she could turn her emotions on and off. And he diagnosed her with histrionic personality disorder. So diving into that real fast, quickly. According to the DSM-5, histrionic personality disorder is a psychiatric disorder distinguished by a pattern of exaggerated emotionality and attention-seeking behaviors. These personality disorders are commonly described as dramatic, excitable, erratic, or volatile. Specifically, people with histrionic personality disorder are typically characterized as flirtatious, seductive, charming, manipulative, impulsive, and lively.
I mean, when you describe it like that, they sound super fun.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that because
I mean, take out the volatile.
Well, see, that's part of it.
Take that word out. Right. All the rest of the stuff sounds like, hey.
Well, the big thing is people with histrionic personality disorder may feel underappreciated or disregarded when they're not the center of attention.
I know a lot of people that.
So it was kind of, she had her ups and her downs and she was erratic.
So it was extreme.
She had extreme behaviors. She was very flirty, obviously. Plenty of people talked about that, but when she wasn't the center of attention, it's like something in her would go off.
Then she'd just be
Yeah.
And she was very manipulative. That was a big thing. She would manipulate those she had affairs with and all of that. Well, one thing I found interesting is in interviews, she said she did not like sex. She didn't like that part. So it was like all about the attention in the relationship, not the sex. Which for someone that had so many different lovers, it's kind of strange.
She was just doing it for attention.
Yeah, it was more about she loved being, you know, their girlfriend in the center of attention and all of that and being doted on. So she somehow got accepted into a surrogate program. I don't know how she slipped through the cracks, but she did.
What state?
So she actually was a surrogate in Kentucky.
Well, girl, that's why it's Kentucky.
Well, I don't know. It didn't say where she was applying and all that, but I know that she at least gave birth. That adoptive family was in Kentucky. So I don't know if that's who she signed up with or if it was a program for the whole U.S. I don't know. They did not give that information. They probably did not want to give that information. Let's hope they're shut down now for letting Diane Downs be your surrogate. Anyway, so.
Could you imagine finding out that, like, that was your surrogate?
I tried to find a little information on this, and you might have checked too. I don't know, but there's nothing out there on. She did have one successful. They paid her $10,000 to carry a baby to term, and she gave birth. So someone in Kentucky
or wherever.
Well, yeah, they could have moved, but
because as you pointed out, it was 41 years ago.
No, but so yeah, someone out there is biologically Diane Downs's daughter, but I don't know.
So this one was a girl too.
Yes. And she happily gave birth and handed it over. Like it wasn't, you know, it's like I said, she liked being pregnant.
Some people just like being pregnant. My grandma had 9 kids.
So this gave her the notion maybe she could just start her own surrogacy clinic. Yeah.
I feel like there's more to it than that.
Well, it didn't work out. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's why it didn't end up happening. She did try again. She got inseminated. Is that what you call it?
Sure.
Yeah, she tried again and it didn't take, or she didn't get pregnant from it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was.
Oh, I bet she lit her hair on fire.
No, she actually didn't, because around this time she started seeing a guy. So she was wrapped up in that relationship. So she's like, thank God. She was just kind of like, oh, okay, fine, whatever. I'm busy with this guy anyway. So this same time when all this was going on, Robert Knickerbocker, who went by Nick.
I would too.
Nick Knickerbocker. And I'm only going to call him Nick from here on out because that's a lot. So they started dating, but he was married. She knew he was married, but
girls like that don't care.
She had written in her diary, in fact, that his wife was in the way of her true love. So she saw the wife. It's mind boggling. And you're going to be so mad about that. So yeah, he was married. He had affairs in the past, but he just wanted fun. He wanted someone to have fun with.
That's what affairs start out like.
He didn't want a divorce. He wanted to have his cake and eat it too. He wanted to stay married. He wasn't looking for a serious relationship, but Diane was. She was all in, head over heels.
Was he older than her?
It didn't say. I don't know. But she ended up getting a tattoo of a rose with his name on it.
Stupid.
And she begged him to get a matching tattoo.
With her name?
Yes.
And he's married.
He's married.
She knows.
But she was very manipulative. And he actually ended up getting a matching tattoo, but without her name on it. He got the rose. Can you imagine?
Just girl.
Oh
no.
I wonder if he removed that. That's something I thought
of. I'm sure cut my whole arm off.
I'm sure he's removed that tattoo since then. That's a good, I'm interested. Well, anyway, Diane kept pushing him. She wanted him to leave his wife, get together, make things serious. And I think he was kind of not a pushover, but just kind of like he would tell her what she wanted to hear.
Cause he wanted to keep.
Yeah. He wanted to keep the affair. Yeah. So he was kind of, you know, like, okay, whatever, sure, fine. And so she was like, okay, well, we're going to get married and we're going to be together. And that's not ever what he was.
They never leave.
He was not intending this. No. Well, so she had to go. She went up to back up to Oregon and started working. She got a job up there and she didn't want to be apart from him, but she was kind of assuming he's going to leave his wife. He's going to move up there with me. Everything's going to work out. Well, this break didn't strengthen anything. In fact, he called things off officially.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to try to make things work with my wife. And no, and she was not accepting that. And by that, I mean, obsessively calling him, writing letters. She sent him roses and he would return them untouched. Yeah. She was sending him roses, flowers, everything. And she was begging him to get back together. So she went to visit him in person in April of 1983. And he was more than done with her. He's like, look, I do not want to be the father of your children. I'm done. Like, I don't want to be a dad. I'm out. And so she did keep a diary and she actually wrote all about Nick in there. And I read some of the excerpts and, she was very juvenile in how she wrote, very kind of like it was a teenage romance. Mm-hmm. It was very, I don't know. It's like
love made people do stupid stuff.
It's like arrested development. She sounded like a teenager. And I heard another article say that all day long, she would be watching MTV music videos at home when she wasn't working. Just kind of.
It's 1983. Yeah. In her defense, MTV was new.
That's true. That's a good point.
So
they were just kind of alluding to she kind of
does it seem juvenile now? Yes.
Well, they were just kind of saying with the diary entries and that she just kind of seemed a little juvenile.
How old was she now? Why don't I keep asking? You don't know. She's got to be like in her 30s, late 20s.
No. So 20s. She was around 27, I believe.
That's late 20s.
Yeah. Mid to late 20s. But she talked about him. Like it was a high school crush.
She was infatuated. Same way with me and John Mayer.
Use the term obsessive lightly because that's a serious word when you're talking about stuff like this, but she was obsessed with him. She actually was obsessed with him. So she wrote in there about how he didn't want to raise her children.
Yeah.
So she did include stuff like this all about, she noted every time she saw him, everything, all of the accounts were in here. So that's pretty much where it leaves us before the crime itself. That's kind of she's in this state where she's single. This guy does not want to leave his wife for her.
He doesn't want to be
the father of the kids. The kid's dad sees them sometimes. He's kind of out of the picture and she's kind of always relied on a man. Mm-hmm. She left her parents' home immediately with a guy. She always just bounced around from guy to guy. So she's without a man right now. So that kind of shows.
They did not have Bumble in 1983. Oh my goodness. There was no swiping. You just had to put on your Jordache jeans and go to the bowling alley. And
yeah. But yeah, that's the prologue, I guess, to this. All right. Do you want to take it over at this point?
Yeah. All right. So I appreciate you going kind of through like her last diary entries leading up to this point, because I think that's where her frame of mind was. You know, as you mentioned, she's obsessed with Nick. And so I think she takes his words to heart. You know, I don't want to be the father of your children. And so around mid-May of 1983, Diane decides that she's going to take her three young kids sightseeing around 10 p.m. in Springfield, Oregon, which I think we all do. You know, we love to go sightsee in the middle of the night with sleepy children. That makes sense.
I mean, I have. I'm done. No, I'm absolutely no.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what there is to see other than maybe like some city lights at 10 o'clock at night, but also like your kids are probably passed out and they're not looking at anything anyway. So Diane says that this bushy-haired man came out of nowhere, flagged her down on the road and was like, give me your car. She says no. And then this man decided to shoot her three children and then shot her in the arm. So as a mom, you know, she's panicked, allegedly, because her kids have just been shot. She's been shot. She's like, I got to get everybody to the hospital. She's, you know, panicked. What do I do? I'm all alone with these kids and they've been shot. So she gets to the hospital. And unfortunately, one of her children, Cheryl, doesn't make it. But Danny, the youngest, and Christy were alive, but just barely. They were severely wounded. You know, these are young children, and they were shot pretty significantly. You know, Diane was shot in the arm, but they were kind of shot in kind of point blank range. And so she's telling the police and the doctors her story about this bushy haired man. And detectives are kind of suspicious from the get go. Mm-hmm. Because of things we kind of alluded to. It's really weird to take kids sightseeing at 10 o'clock at night on this mm-hmm. kind of rural road. And they also mentioned that Diane was kind of having an inappropriate reaction to the situation. You know, here she has these three young kids, one of whom didn't make it. The other two are, you know, in super critical condition, may not make it. And she actually told the police that she was surprised that the bullet had pierced Danny's spine and not his heart.
This whole thing, I mean, as a mom who has a 7-year-old son, I cannot even put into words how horrifying and traumatic the thought of something like that happening. Not me doing it, but just like I'm on a dirt road. First of all, I'm not stopping. But then, you know what I mean? But then for that person to shoot my child, like I wouldn't be able to breathe when I got to the hospital. Like I would be hysterical, which I think 99.8% of mothers would be. But like you said, her reaction was just very, what's the word I'm looking for? She's just very aloof almost. Like she's just, you know.
Right.
Continue.
I think you touched on something too, that if your child gets shot, it's concerning where they got shot, but ultimately the concern is they got shot and I need to get them to the hospital. It doesn't matter if they got shot in the spine, the heart,
the toe. It doesn't matter.
They're shot and I need to get them help. But to be surprised that it was hit in the wrong location. And so police are obviously taking note of Diane's injuries, because here she has this kind of superficial arm wound, but her children have significant injuries. Mm-hmm. And police are kind of like, well, even if this guy was, you know, out on this rural road trying to hijack you, why would he shoot your kids?
Exactly. Why wouldn't
he shoot you?
And they were sleeping at the time.
Right.
So she's the threat. She's the adult. Her children are sleeping in the back seat. If he wants money, the car, whatever, why would he just maim her? And then it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, some crimes are senseless, but there's too many far-fetched things in this story.
Yeah. So she, from the beginning, she's not looking too good. But obviously, you know, they kind of want to tread lightly because of the situation. You know, she did lose a child. Her other two children are suffering with significant injuries. But then they go and kind of look at the vehicle itself and kind of take note of the forensic evidence. And it really doesn't match the story that Diane's told them. So the blood spatter in the car doesn't match the version of the story that she's told them. The gunpowder residue that they find in the car doesn't really match where it should have been based on kind of where she said everyone was. And they also kind of go back to the diary entries where she's talking about how obsessed she is with Nick and he doesn't want kids. He doesn't want to be the father of these children. So eventually they come across this witness who says he passed Diane on the night of the shooting. And when I say he passed her, he didn't just come across her. He actually physically passed her in his vehicle because she was driving so slowly that he had to go around her. But Diane said she was panicked and she was in a rush to get these kids to the hospital. But that's obviously not true. She was driving incredibly slow, almost as if to take her time so that they wouldn't be alive by the time she got to the hospital. It's kind of what police were thinking.
So
this story is giving me so much anxiety as a mother. Like I cannot even... I saw you just look at my chest. Is my neck getting red?
No, I saw you scratching it. I'm like, she's getting high.
I mean, like I said, as a mom, like I have a knot in my throat. Like I can't imagine, like you're a child and it's your mom. Like your mom's your protector and who you go to. She doesn't hurt you. She doesn't, except in this case when she, I mean, I just can't, I'm going to cry before this is over.
Yeah, and I don't know, I didn't come across anything in what I was reading, but I don't know if they were ever able to kind of figure out if she just drove slowly and then that was kind of her delay, or if she actually waited for a period of time before she
left
the hospital.
And it could have been both, too.
Yeah. She definitely was not in a rush
to
get there. So something else that kind of raised the red flag for police was when Diane would come and visit her two kids, Christy and Danny, in the hospital. Christy in particular was super anxious. You know, the machines would just go crazy. Her heartbeat would race and she would get really pale. And she was just incredibly fearful whenever Diane came to visit her in the hospital. As you mentioned, that's not a normal reaction to have when your mom comes and visits you in the hospital. You know,
these are little children.
Right. Mm-hmm.
These aren't teenage. They are not 13. These are, you know, five, six, seven-year-old kids. Like, that's when you really want your mama. Like, especially if you're hurt. And So they knew. They knew when she was acting like that, that this isn't right.
Yeah. So, you know, Christy was one super traumatized after this whole event because she's aware enough of what's going on. Danny was the youngest. And so he was a little less able to kind of remember details and things like that. But Christy was so traumatized as well as, you know, she had a stroke from being shot. And so she wasn't able to speak for quite a while. And so police couldn't interview her, but they had kind of this, advocate that spent time with her, kind of getting her comfortable and getting to know her so that they could eventually interview her and hear what she had to say. But of course, Diane is still kind of trying to spin her own story, saying that she might have known the person or the person might have known her because she thought that this person called her name before they attacked her. And she's really just kind of trying to spin a tale. To get the suspicion off of her. Eventually, Christy is able to speak again, and she tells the prosecutors that her mother is the one who shot them, and there was never any bushy-haired man or strange man or anybody out on that road except for her mother. So Diane is arrested and charged in February of 1984. She's charged with the murder of Cheryl and the attempted murder of Danny and Christy. Of course, it wouldn't be Diane Downs if she didn't play to the media. She loved it. She gave so many media interviews before the trial happened, and she maintained her innocence. She still maintains her innocence to this day. I don't think she realized how she came off during these interviews. So she wasn't actually getting any sympathy from the public. They thought she appeared narcissistic, callous, strange, not how a mother should react. If your child dies, your children almost die, that should be the focus, is your children. It shouldn't be about you and mm-hmm. what you're going through. I think that everyone just kind of didn't really believe Diane and didn't really feel like she was telling the truth. And I think people were kind of hoping to learn the real story during the trial. Thankfully, Christy was able to speak at that point. And so she was kind of a star witness for the prosecution. She testified that Diane stopped the car that night. She walked to the trunk, got something out of the trunk, then reached inside the window and shot all three of the children. Obviously, I've never been in this kind of situation, but even as an adult, I can't imagine something like this happening to me. But as a child, to, you know, watch my mother come at me.
It's your mom. Like,
yeah. I mean, just the confusion, the panic, the fear. She's incredibly brave for getting up there and telling what
I
really happened.
I can't even imagine. She's probably terrified.
Sure.
She, you know, tells her story, and that was kind of the nail in the coffin for Diane. But let's also not forget that Diane was pregnant during the trial. She somehow had been able to find another specimen before her trial and got pregnant, again, as kind of some kind of ploy to get sympathy from the jury. Nobody is really buying what she's trying to sell. Everybody is kind of coming around to who Diane really is and the terrible things that she's done. As you mentioned earlier, her defense attorney does try to show that her father abused her when she was young, and that's kind of the explanation for her behavior. But again, she goes back on that later on and says this never happened. Ultimately, there's not really an excuse for Diane. It's kind of plain as day what really happened that night. And so she is found guilty on all charges in June of 1984. She's sentenced to life in prison plus 50 years. She has her baby, but that baby is put up for adoption. And it was another little girl. She gave her a name. I can't remember what it was, but obviously they quickly changed that so that she wouldn't have kind of any knowledge.
Oh, I would too.
Yeah. She gets sentenced, and somehow 3 years after she is locked up, she then escapes by scaling a barbed wire fence.
She's kind of like the... There are some similarities, not in terms of their methods or killing, but to Ted Bundy, where
he jumped out the window in the courthouse.
He escaped prison. She escaped prison. She kind of got in the media. Some people called her the bombshell, the blonde bombshell, you know, where people were, she doesn't look like a killer.
Yeah.
That type
almost
of thing.
Almost like.
Yeah.
Where sexualized she was,
yes,
it.
Like, oh, yeah. Look at this little blonde woman and all that. And then like Farrah Fawcett played her in that movie where. There's kind of some.
And Zac Efron played him. Yeah, I'm like, just, come on, people.
I mean, they're not similar in the way of what they did, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No,
similar as like, yeah, just it kind of, it's gross. It's gross. Yeah.
So I read somewhere that she had like just every piece of clothing on that she owned in prison so that she could actually scale the box.
I was wondering, because it was 18 feet tall.
Yeah. Good Lord.
I didn't know how she did it. I was thinking today, what did she do? Climb up? I don't know. Okay. So she tied,
like, no,
tied yeah. a bunch of stuff and threw it over.
No, she put it all on like Joey from
Friends.
So she
like, put it all on.
Yeah.
And scaled the fence and somehow got over it.
Oh. You remember that episode where he puts it all on?
Yes. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And so I think I read somewhere too, where she kind of hid out like behind a car or under a car so that, you know, people wouldn't see her, but she's not that intelligent. because 11 days later, she was found inside the home of her cellmate's husband.
Yes, bitch. That cellmate, geez, nope.
See, I told you,
you can't trust girls. Diane Downs go to your house.
No.
Police were kind of like, okay, you know, we got to do something more with her. So she gets another 5 years onto her sentence. So now we're at a life sentence plus 50 years plus 5 years. And then she is moved to a different prison in New Jersey. She transfers to New Jersey. And that's kind of where she stays. And I think another reason that they moved her that far away is because she was also trying to keep in contact with Christy and Danny. And the prosecutors in the case actually ended up adopting Christy and Danny in 1986. And so they were kind of like, no, we really don't want you to have any association with her.
Oh, no. So yeah.
It was better that she kind of moved across the country. And it was in a more secure prison. It's a maximum security facility. Well,
especially she escaped once. Those kids were probably terrified.
Right. And so I think it was best for everyone that she kind of further away. So she has been up for parole a few times. But I think, as you guys probably know, the parole board really wants to hear that you are remorseful for what you've done. You've learned from what you've done. You've bettered yourself in prison. All of that kind of, for lack of a better word, jargon. Like, it's kind of almost like a script that if you kind of check all these boxes, they're like, okay, we can put you back into society. But what they really don't want to hear is that you're innocent. You didn't do this. That's not going to get you anywhere with them. In 2008, when she comes up for her first parole hearing, she maintains her innocence and they deliberate for 3 hours. They interview Diane for about 30 minutes and they're like, no, we're not going to let you have parole. She had another opportunity, I believe in 2010, and she was denied once again.
That soon after. Is there a certain amount of time? Like, how do you know how often she can go up for parole? Is it?
I don't. I think, though, that it's pretty common once you're kind of eligible for parole. If they don't really put a time limit on it, you can kind of make that application. But after she was denied the second time, they put a longer time on it. And I believe she was supposed to have a parole hearing in 2020, but I couldn't find any more information about that. And I'm thinking it may or may not have happened because of COVID.
Yeah.
So it may have gotten pushed back because of that. But from everything I can tell, she's still claiming that she's innocent and that this bushy-haired man did this. So, you know, the chance of her getting out, I don't think is very strong.
No. She has no self-awareness either. She has no idea how she comes across.
She doesn't. I actually found the most recent article I found, I think was from January of last year or January of this year, one of the two. But she was incredibly concerned about herself contracting COVID.
Yes.
And, you know, she couldn't do her regular job because of the COVID concerns. And she was very concerned that she was going to get it because she was in prison. And it just, it's a little tone deaf, I think, because, you know, while I think it's certainly true that prison populations are at a higher risk due to kind of the close proximity of everyone, I think it's also kind of selfish to be concerned about yourself getting COVID.
I don't have children and mothers killing children really bothers me. Like, two things, animal stuff. I hate that with a passion. Sex trafficking really disturbs me for some reason. That just really, something creeps me out. And then mothers killing children is one too. Like,
any person killing a child is
yeah, no, disgusting. It's all bad, but there's something.
It's especially heinous when it's your mom.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just
It's all bad. I'm definitely not.
And it always seems to be for completely selfish.
100% selfish reasons.
Yeah. It's like about a man. I mean, it's always over a man. First of all, there is no man on this earth that would know. No. What? No.
Mm-mm. Well, they brought Nick Knickerbocker in for questioning because they, at one point, they kind of thought he might be
involved.
They didn't think he did it because he wasn't in Oregon, but they thought he could have some affiliation to the murder. And he went in there and he was like, I think she might have done it because of me. Like, he kind of had that, like, I'm scared. And he was scared of her too. He wasn't involved or anything, but he definitely had that realization, like, oh my. That I can't imagine. Oof. She really just left a tornado everywhere she went.
Mm-hmm.
Or a mudslide. I don't know what natural disasters are up there. Earthquakes? I don't know.
There's volcanoes.
In Oregon?
In Washington State.
That's true.
I didn't know that.
Like the back of my dad's house, you could see Mount Rainier, and it was just, it looked like a postcard. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Fun fact, Mount St. Helens erupted the year I was born.
That's good. That's better than the other stuff.
Which is also up there.
Can't wait to go back to the Pacific Northwest.
Well, get that second vaccine shot.
next week. So any fun facts in that area that you can think of off the top of your head?
She's like, what are you talking about? I live here.
You know what the state motto of Oregon is?
I don't know.
What? You live there. What's your state? Oregon. The blank state.
It's the beaver state. I know that. But I mostly know that because I went to Oregon State. So.
The beaver state.
The rose state? Is it the rose?
No, it's the beaver state. But
she just said it.
No, I thought she said, I thought so. I didn't
okay,
know.
Okay, so I think our motto is she flies with her own wings.
Mm. I like that. She flies with her own wings. Yeah.
We're just a natural state.
I didn't know how, like, they're really known for roses, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Portland's the city of roses.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, the city of roses. But yeah, they have a lot of them. I've seen the whole city, apparently. I've seen them. I have pictures of them. It's true.
I believe you.
We've already covered Washington, so we should remember what that was. The Evergreen State?
Sure.
Wasn't it the Evergreen State?
Yep,
okay. Yeah. So do you have a hometown murder?
I don't have a murder, but I have a disappearance from where I live currently.
Oh, who is that?
I'm trying to cover it.
Some other time, Lacey.
I'm not going to cover it. I'm just curious. I'm just curious because of, you know, that area, there's so many crimes that it would almost, I feel like, be hard to not come from somewhere that didn't have something. I don't know. Is it, were they on the show Disappeared?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm gonna have to rewatch. I don't know who you're talking about off the top of my head.
Yeah, I haven't watched the Disappeared episode yet. It's like a in the future.
Yeah, sure. Do you listen to Obsessed with Disappeared?
I don't.
It's definitely mostly comedy podcast, but Disappeared is my favorite ID show. So I've watched them a couple of times, and then I was going through them and listening to their takes because sometimes they have the guy's voice, Christopher is his name, that was the narrator for like the first 6 seasons on there. And it's interesting. He sounds a lot different when he's not narrating.
It's his professional voice.
Yeah, yeah. He definitely turns it on and off. It's just kind of interesting. But yeah, I followed him on
Twitter.
Customer
service voice.
It is. Exactly. Or like a on television. My podcast voice is my normal voice. Maybe I should be.
No. What did we talk about last week? No voices.
No accents.
No accent.
Yeah, I got in trouble. So do you think it recorded?
I think so. I think we're good.
That's my fear.
Oh my God.
Did it work? Younger generation, Gen Zers. Or like, why don't millennials look at the camera when they take pictures?
I don't know where to look.
Like, I look at the screen. I don't look at the, and I'm like, I don't look at the the peephole or whatever. I don't do that.
So am I looking now? Like,
yeah, where? You're looking in the, I don't ever do that.
So you look at yourself.
Yeah. Well, when I'm taking a picture, I look up there.
See, it just looks like you're looking up. It doesn't look like
I'm looking. I don't, it's hard. It's dark. I don't know where the hole is.
Right there. That's God, we're our parents. We're like, no, right there.
Oh,
Lord.
Oh, that's an old accent. I can't do that.
Stop with it. That Stop count? With it. No.
Oh, shiny.
All right.
Elise is like, they're fired.
Yeah. She's like, we're just going to scrap this. And I'm going to contact someone else. You're allowed three bitches.
Seven minimum. No.
No MFs.
I don't think I edit those out.
Sometimes.
Do I?
You're the Stevie Nicks of witches.
I'll take that one.
Well, that case was kind of a bummer.
Super bummer.
Yeah. That's our first.
We don't like doing kid stuff.
Yeah. And that's our first one we've covered where the mom is the one involved, which is always worse.
I feel like
for that some reason
should also be the last one
that yeah. we do about Mothers it. Who Killed. Ugh. I watched briefly a Snapped episode about her. It's one of the early on ones and it's super short and the acting is real. You know, they do mm-hmm. all those reenactments. It's not very good. Mm-hmm. It's one I don't recommend watching because it's just.
Yeah.
You don't get a lot out of it, but and one thing we forgot to talk about, and I was just reminded of it a minute ago, when she supposedly killed or shot her children, the song "Hungry Like the Wolf" was on by Duran Duran.
So in the movie,
was that in there?
It's in the movie, and you know Farrah Fawcett plays her in the film. And they play the song in court.
Yep, that's what I was about to talk
and
about.
And she's like tapping her finger or a pencil.
She couldn't resist.
She was like dancing to it. Like,
and that's what they did. That's really happened in real life. They played that during her court sentencing, or not sentencing, but her trial. And she could not help herself. She started dancing to that song.
Which is disgusting.
How could you?
Because like, I feel like even now, like, my dad passed away right after I turned 30, and it was super hard on me. I was his only child, and we were super tight. Mm-hmm. And, like, our thing was Bob Seger. Like, we both loved him. That's awesome. And, like, Max's first concert, I took him to see Bob Seger because it was
now. How funny. That kind of reminds me of my dad a little bit, too.
Yeah, I think it's just that whole era. Oh,
yeah, for sure.
And so that was kind of my dad's thing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I kind of passed it on to Max that, you know, that's going to be our thing now.
That's awesome.
But even now, if I'm just driving down the road and a Bob Seger song comes on, like it stops me in my tracks. Like sure, it hits me in my gut and just makes me like tear up and almost, because all that floods back, all that. So the fact that this mother is snapping and tapping and to a song that was playing when her children, well, when she shot her children.
She doesn't, her eyes don't swell up with tears.
Like, you almost can't, I mean, and I'm sure there's, you know, your dad's deceased as well. Mm-hmm. There's things that remind you or a certain song that just, like, takes your breath almost.
Yeah.
So, it just.
Just that she still found so much joy in that song and could not resist dancing. I just thought that was
That's not a natural reaction.
Can you imagine
reaction.
What the jury was thinking?
Oh, shh.
They were just like, oh, no.
This piece of trash. Like,
you're supposed to act a certain way to present yourself. And I know that sometimes the social cues are off, but I couldn't imagine being a jury member and seeing that reaction and thinking she was innocent. I just.
No, not at all. Not at all. No.
But, yeah. And we were talking about this a little earlier today, but this is not. This isn't what I necessarily think is going on or anything, but I thought it might be important to just kind of talk about how postpartum depression, that is a real and serious thing.
100% real.
That's definitely not all that was going on with
Diane.
I'm not even trying to say that.
Her children were not infant babies.
Sure, but this brings up, I guess, a good opportunity to talk to our listeners about if you know someone who's just given birth, it's a hard time. I personally have not had a child. You have. Mm-hmm. So you know it's
an
hard.
Adjustment.
It's an adjustment.
It's a physical adjustment, mental, emotional, like your whole.
Yeah, your body, your brain, everything. There's a lot going on.
Not, I mean,
And that it's hard to explain, and other mothers will understand what I'm talking about. It's like you love this child with every ounce of your body, and you cannot describe it. And it just sometimes makes you just tear up. And I know that sounds super freaking cheesy, but you feel all that love, but at the same time, mm-hmm. you're battling with your own identity. Like, now I'm a mom. I'm not Ashley. Now it's not about me. Yeah. It's about him or her. And it's
there's a lot to deal with.
And it's the hormones you know, that you're definitely dealing with mm-hmm. from everything. And check on your friends. I mean,
yeah.
And even if they tell you they're
even
okay,
if you think they're doing okay,
maybe they're not. Yeah. Because that's the one thing about mental health that we should all know by now, is it's super, super hard sometimes for people to ask for help.
Oh, yeah.
To admit that they need help. There's such a stigma around mental health and
especially for mothers.
They
think they have to have it all together, and that they're supposed to act a certain way. And if they don't, something might be wrong with them. And it's very normal.
Or someone's going to judge them or talk about them. Or, yeah.
It's very normal to feel a wide array of emotions after you give birth. And if you are pregnant or you've just given birth and you're having any type of issues, just please reach out. I know it's hard.
I feel like more often than not, other mothers, mm-hmm. we understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to admit it.
Someone that's gone through it. Sure.
Oh, necessarily. Yeah. Or to blast it on social media mm-hmm. or tell, you know.
It's kind of one of those unspoken things that so many people have dealt with. And
yeah. So, you're not mentally ill. There's nothing wrong with you. It's
exactly
completely normal.
And new moms don't get as much sleep. And sleep deprivation is big on mental health. That can really wear on you. So if you have a family member or a friend that's just given birth, chances are they're not sleeping well. So if there's anything, go over and say, hey, take a nap. I want to, you know, mm-hmm. babysit for a few hours mm-hmm. or just stuff like that. Even if they're like, no, don't. I don't want you to do this.
Do it anyway.
Insist. Do it anyway. Just do it anyway.
We got to stick together, girls.
Yeah, we got to take care of the mamas
boys.
And the daddies. All the parents out there. Just, it takes a village, I think.
It's 100%. Really
don't make, you know, no one needs to do it by themselves.
No, no. You don't.
For real.
You need help.
But, yeah. On that note, where are we next week?
New York?
New York.
Unique,
I think we're
New York.
Unique New York. Oh, my
See,
gosh.
She
I still
can't do it.
That's our prep before we start. Unique New York.
See?
Okay, I'll never do it. Blah, blah, blah. So, yes, we're in New York next week.
Still can't do it.
Whew, there's a lot to choose
it's
from.
It's a hard word to say, New York.
New York.
Max,
NYC.
Max is
baby.
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Like
That's
New
precious.
York. I'm like, it's New Orleans.
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
That is so sweet. I'm going to start calling it that.
Of course you are.
That's a lot easier to say. It rolls with the tongue.
It rolls off easier.
I don't have a case in mind yet.
Me
I'm
either.
Just going to have to start
I kind of do, but
oh, really?
It's been done to the death of it, no pun intended. So I'm like, I can't do that one. Hmm. But it's one of my favorite New York cases.
Maybe one time for a special, we should cover cases that are.
Everybody knows?
Yeah, just are. If,
our
if
favorite.
If they're our favorites, but they're popular, that might be a fun special sometime.
Isn't it sad that we have a favorite
Yeah,
murder?
I mean, I guess that's a dark way to put it. Our favorite to discuss.
There you go.
Delve into.
To dive into, yeah.
But anyway, until next week.
Follow us on all the things.
Yes, follow us on Instagram at United States of Murder, on Facebook and Twitter at US of M Podcast. And then check out our Patreon. We need to add some more stuff, but we are continually coming up with ideas there. And we will send you stickers right off the bat. You don't have to wait for that. So go to patreon.com/United States of Murder.
And order a shirt.
Yeah, and we have that link in our bio. It's, I think, threadless.com/United States of Murder, but I'll throw those links up again.
Do it. Throw them.
All right. Bye.
Bye.